Community Corner is brought to you by JN Foundation, impacting communities through innovation and inspiring Jamaicans to find a way.
Oh, I know a place we can carry on. Oh, I know a place we can carry on. Come children, we must carry on now. We can carry on. Yeah.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to Talking History on Nationwide 90 FM. We're now into Community Corner, and I am so thankful to Jamaica National for sponsoring this segment. In Community Corner today, we return to the parish of St. Thomas that used to be called St. Thomas in the East until around 1867 to distinguish it from St. Thomas in the Vale, which is now a part of St. Catherine. Last week, we had a great conversation with a citizen of Trelawney who supported the job of Dr. Jenny Gemmott, who researched the parish of Trelawney. But this week, we go back to St. Thomas. You know, Dr. Gemmott had done St. Thomas before, but, you know, we like to talk to people who are actually born in the parish. So now, it's right back to St. Thomas to talk with Mr. Paris Liu Ayi Sr. I have to say Sr. because many of us know Paris, who is at UWR at the moment. So, just a little bit about the Parish Histories of Jamaica Project, the Jamaica National Parish Histories of Jamaica Project, before we actually speak with Mr. Liu Ayi. The project is a collaboration between the Jamaica National Foundation and the Department of History and Archaeology at the University of the West Indies Mona Campus. The project has completed 5 parishes to date, and they are Portland, Trelawney, St. Thomas, St. Mary, and St. Catherine. Upcoming parishes are St. Elizabeth and, hopefully by the end of this year, 2020, St. James. So, I first asked this son of St. Thomas, where in St. Thomas he was born?
Well, I was born in Yalos, right in the crossroads. The shop, which is still there, 1948, and grew up there. My first school was at the Baptist Kindergarten School, right across from the Yalos Primary School there now. So I spent my early days right there in Yalos.
And what was life like growing up there?
I left Yalos when I was about 4, right after Hurricane Charlie. So that was a rough time because the shop and everything was destroyed.
That was 1951.
But I really wanted to go back a little bit more where St. Thomas is concerned.
Okay, go ahead.
Because when I look through the history there, there's a nice part that is missing. It has to do with the Chinese in St. Thomas. Because my family, my great-grandparents originally came from China, went to Guyana as children, left Guyana, was a businessman, went to Costa Rica, business there, then he moved to Montego Bay. Before the turn of the century, came to Yalos, they started shopping Yalos.
Oh.
And I saw a picture of the Anglican church there, St. David's, and all of my great-grandparents and their parents and their siblings were all buried right there.
Oh.
Close to the picture that they have, there is an encircled section where you'll find the IE family there. Because
so you have almost like a family plot in the churchyard?
Family plot right there. Because my great-grandmother from Guyana was Anglican. So that was her church.
So do you still go to that church now?
No. My grandfather, her first son, he was one of those early bright boys that first went to St. George's. And at St. George's, he became Roman Catholic. And he got his sisters and everybody to switch, which my great-grandmother wasn't very happy about, but that's how it went. So
okay.
The rest of the family changed to Roman Catholic.
So I think you said you left Yalos at about age 4.
Yeah.
To go where?
Let me keep it in St. Thomas first, eh? Because from Yalos, some of the family, the girls got married, went to Golden Grove, the Mu Youngs. They established their family in Golden Grove. They had their shop there. That family were the Mu Youngs, and they produced Hilda. And the offspring from those would be, you know, Thalia Lynn.
Yes.
That's her family.
Oh.
Raymond Chang. That's her family. All those are my cousins who came there.
Mm.
We had another set, Jeffrey Lee. He went to Port Morant. His shop was there in Port Morant. They started their shop and their business there. One of the persons there was Joseph Lee, one of the foundation members for Grace Kennedy, because Carlton Alexander and all these guys followed the pattern that the early Chinese shops had. So I had uncles who had shops also in Stokes Hall, in Sunning Hill, in Morant Bay. I mean, I used to work this summer at Chungsang Wholesale in Morant Bay, which is still there, and in Baptist, which is also just outside of Yala.
Okay.
So that's what I was missing there. The Chinese shops played a very, very important role for the people in St. Thomas and all over the island. But
okay.
I know of the St. Thomas experience.
Yes, but what about the economy? Who would you say, you know, helped to build the economy of St. Thomas?
Well, St. Thomas during that period, as I remember I was a little boy at the time, was one, bananas, United Fruit Company, coconuts, copra business. Sugar cane was still around in Duckenfield. We had shops in Duckenfield as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I said I went to Kingston and I opened shop in Rosetown and Jonestown.
Mm.
But I went back to St. Thomas in the late 50s.
Okay.
56 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school in Trinityville.
Mm-hmm.
There we also had about three, there were three Chinese shops there.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce, I used to go to the river during lunchtime when you shouldn't go. And I grew up catching janga and fish and stuff like that. My maternal grandmother was from Landyui, in St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat in Landyui, picking pimento and coconuts and stuff like that, and in the river.
Mm-hmm.
But also at that time, I used to hear a lot of the stories about the slave yard, because her grandmother came from the slave yard there before emancipation. So I used to hear a lot of the stories. And the village across the river called Erie Castle, that's where we used to go.
Yes.
Had features and stuff like old-time villages back from where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
I remember all of that. And I used to get stories before I knew anything else about Judgment Cliff, about that awful night when people were killed and the bad people suffered and stuff like that. So I knew about Judgment Cliff from those days.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially at night when we used to be picking the pimento and sitting on the barbecue and hearing the stories and stuff like that.
So when you were growing up, did you hear much about the Morant Bay War and Paul Bogle and all those martyrs?
Well, when we were in Yalas, quite a number of my father's close friends were Bogles, who were related directly from Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So they used to give us all different kind of stories. I mean, I used to think it was just stories they're telling us. They used to talk about them at that point.
But when you went to school, did you do history, and did you hear more about that in your history books?
Well, we did hear about it. I went to Trinityville, and I was the only one that passed the scholarship that year.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to go to Morant Bay High School. But unfortunately, Morant Bay High School wasn't ready at the beginning of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent me to Kingston. I wanted to go to St. George's, where all my other grandfathers went to.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have space because it was late.
Mm-hmm.
So they parked me at Excelsior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And after the first year at Excelsior, Father called me. They said I could come now. I said, no, I'm very, very happy at Excelsior.
So you're not only part there, you stayed there.
yeah, you're an excellent school.
If you were to conduct me on a tour of St. Thomas, what would be the favorite sites that you'd want me to see?
I saw some of the pictures. Of course, you know, the famous falls. going to Morant Bay.
Yes.
Something that's missing, and I thought that was so important. You had the Easington Bridge and all that. But there was something called Oliver Bridge, which was before the Bustamante Bridge. And the Oliver Bridge was supposed to be the longest bridge in Jamaica. It was different from any other bridge that you could see. It was pretty narrow, and you would have little bays for parachuting, so you'd have to go in these bays. It wasn't a two-way thing.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was there, it was really in disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I used to be going back to the country on the Tiger bus, when you approach the bridge, everybody would have to come off the bus.
what a fight.
Behind the bus.
Where approximately is that? Would that Oliver Bridge be?
Right where the Alexander Bridge, Bustamante Bridge is.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it really, really broke down badly.
Yes. But I suppose you imagine that I've been to the major ones already, like, you know, Stony Gut and the Morant-Bay Courthouse and some of the plantations and so on. So you wouldn't take me there.
Well, of course, there's Bath, you know, the gardens, botanical gardens.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Up in the Blue Mountains, those are really very gorgeous areas also that you would go. But some other important people that I remember there, because the light burns from the Yalas area. They were very, very close friends to my family there. And Bob Lightburn, as a matter of fact, I remember when I came back from graduate school, and I knew he didn't come to meet me, but when I stepped off the plane at Palisades, it was Robert Lightburn who met me at the bottom of the steps and congratulated me and stuff like that. I'm sure he came to meet some. But I felt special.
Absolutely. You can count yourself as a dignitary who was met by Bob Lightburn.
He was in life. He used to meet with me almost every morning.
Yes, yes.
Talking about solutions for yourself.
So, tell me, because we have to wrap, but tell me, what do you think about the project itself, the Jane project?
What Jane is doing in terms of preserving the history of our parishes and setting it from our point of view. And this is why when I told Onyeka I wanted to talk to you, is to be able to get some more oral history going into it to make it. Because, you know, some people think of history as dry and boring and dull. So if you put back more people and relate it to people who came from there and can relate to the things that happened there, that will what bring back the interest.
Yes, I think one of the... I think one of the challenges that some of the researchers may have had, you know, was exactly to get that enough oral history and also to balance the oral history with the documented history. But I think between your stories and between the documented work, I think that Jamaica, because this is going to be aired on Talking History, and I think that this will help to balance the documented history. But I can't leave without asking you this.
But I have one more to drop on your full leave.
Okay, go ahead.
I remember when I used to stay with my uncle in the Morant Bay area, License, is outside of Morant Bay. And I mean, he grew up in China, so he barely spoke English. But let me tell you, the first time he did it for me, I mean, I did one day he was taking me at 10 o'clock in the night, he was dragging me through the bush. And then after I saw him taking something out and wrapping his head, and he had this bag with him. We were going to a Kumina meeting.
Really?
And and so we'd go by this where there's a big bonfire, and he would, what he had in the bag was really white rum and stuff like that.
Oh, for the table.
To him, and he knew the songs, and he would dance with them around the fire. I couldn't believe it.
Acculturation, man.
He knew it, and they accepted him, you know.
That's excellent.
This is part of the linkages.
The inter-ethnic relations.
Yes.
But of course, we can't dismiss the conflicts that have arisen over the years because of misunderstandings, because of differences in how people treat other people. And this is what we have to work on. Yes. As we build our country. But I was laughing because I have a friend out there, a former student called Omar. We were joking with him because I know he likes to, he's an advocate, he's a human rights advocate. So we were asking if St. Thomas people are planning to seal off the road and block the road from other people coming over there, because up to that time you hadn't had any cases of coronavirus. How is the parish doing now? People are, you know, are following the instructions.
I think so, and they're trying to keep it clean. But the other thing that I remember, especially the Yalas area and the Yalas Pond area, is that we used to have fantastic grapes grown there. Beautiful black, purple grapes. I mean, for some reason, that whole thing has disappeared. I don't see grapes being grown in Jamaica on a big scale anymore. My great-grandmother used to have some huge bunches of grapes. Very, very, very sweet. And that seemed to have been lost.
So you're saying that some of the early crops that used to be grown there are no longer grown there.
You don't see them anymore.
And would you say that agriculture has been largely replaced by commercial activities?
And the imports need to go back.
Well, maybe in a post-COVID Jamaica, We will have to have those conversations about self-sufficiency. Thank you so much for joining Talking History today. This was really fascinating. I learned a lot. I'm sure my listeners have learned a lot. And I think all Jamaica, you should be very proud of your family at the University of the West Indies. We know about your son and what he does. Thank you very much, Mr. Paris Leo Ahi, for joining us on Talking History today. And keep listening and spreading the word about Talking History.
Again, continue to doing the history because we think it's so, so important.
All right. Thank you so much.
Community Corner was brought to you by JN Foundation, impacting communities through innovation and inspiring Jamaicans to find a way.